The fantastic thing about reading this is just being absolutely gobsmacked at the enormous research that not only you two also did, but you had lots of other people, I feel, working for you for a number of years to put together this extraordinary story of unpicking who actually owns these ships. Because I should make it clear to the listeners that you can't actually serve papers on someone for doing something illegal till you find out who actually owns the ship. And that was the big task, wasn't it?
That was our big task, to find the owner. He has been hunted for by several international police organizations for years and years. No one found out. Every time they tried to find the real owner, they found some paper trails in tax havens, and there it stopped. So while Peter Hammerstedt and Bob Barker and Sea Shepherd were chasing the tender at sea, we were chasing the owner at land. Truly, we traveled, I think, to 11 countries, 5 continents to sort out that mystery, because that was the only way to stop this ship who has been poaching for 20 years.
And how long did you actually spend before you actually found something concrete that you felt you could pin on them?
Oh, this took us about 2 years, a little bit on and off. We worked for a newspaper in Norway, so we published a story there first, and then we continued, and then we had leave off from work to do the book. So I would say from the day we started until the day we stood on the front porch of the guy we call Mr. Big in the book, it took 2 years. And we knocked on his door, and he came out with his shirt open, like a golden chain here, with a cigarillo. And we talked to him for a while, and his story was full of holes.
It's almost comforting that he looked like such a cliche, isn't it?
these are very respected people in the local communities. Probably the local communities knows what they are doing, where they get their profit from. But these guys also, they're building schools and soccer fields, and they're sitting on the first bench in the church at Christmas Eve. Donate a lot to local communities. So people really don't want to know what they're really up to.
Well, I felt that you were very sensitive about that sort of thing in your book, that, you know, often the people who are crewing these illegal ships, they're just guys trying to get by. They've got families, they've got villages. They don't often stop to think about the morality of this, that this is an endangered species, that it's actually illegal to actually hunt for this. Now, the Thunder itself was chasing Patagonian toothfish. What do you know about the Patagonian toothfish?
Well, it's a fish that we didn't know much about until the late 70s. Then there was an American merchant was down in Chile, and he was searching for a new fish that he could develop and sell on the U.S. market. And the local fishermen there, they had this big, monstrous fish in Chile. They didn't want to eat it. They didn't like it. He brought it back to the U.S., and he marketed this as Chilean sea bass. It's not a sea bass. It has not a lot to do with Chile, but that's kind of the name. And it became a gastronomical success on the, you know, the high-end restaurants in Chicago, New York. And from there, the poaching operations started outside Chile, Argentina. They moved eastwards, South Georgia, South Africa, to the French possessions, and eventually in the 90s found their way into Australian waters around Heard Island. And Australia in the 90s waged almost a war against the pirate fleets, sent military weapon, navy ships out to try to get them. Managed to chase them out of Australian waters, and then the last surviving poachers went all the way down to the ice edge in Antarctica. And they made a fortune out of the fish. They get $20 a kilo frozen from the vessels, so a journey down usually takes 3-4 months. They could earn $5 million. So it's very profitable, and the fish, I only tasted it once. It tasted very good, but it's considered a delicacy.
There is an Australian firm that's allowed to do a certain amount of limited catching of this fish, isn't there?
Yeah.
Austral Fisheries does, and you also have Norwegian vessels fishing in Antarctica. When the Sea Shepherd started their operation, the legal operators were very, very scared of what happened to the market for the Patagonian toothfish. That will give it, they would give it a bad name, or that the sea shepherd attacked the legal fleet also. So they decided, Austral Fisheries decided to cooperate in the hunt. They even had a vessel chasing the tundra together for a limited time, together with the Bob Barker and Sea Shepherd.
The other thing that struck me that I'm sure was impressed you was the incredible bravery of the Bob Barker crew. I mean, to a certain extent, they're all slightly crazy because they're quite obsessed and they're quite driven, but they're amazingly brave. They risk their lives quite a lot to do this too. Did you develop quite a good relationship with the crew because of your feeling for what they were going through?
Absolutely. We as investigative reporters can, you know, relate to being driven, although we're not as brave as these guys are. We developed a relationship quite early with the crew, or with the captain, Peter Hammerstedt. He's a Swede, and we kind of made a deal with them. You continue the chase at sea, try to send us photos of the crew. We can go and try to identify them and try to figure out who's behind the operation. So we have a very good relationship with Sea Shepherd. They're not overly popular some places in Norway because of whaling campaigns. There was a local politician in the north of Norway saying that Sea Shepherd was like the perfect blend of Baader Meinhof and Al-Qaeda. So we've had that. But we've only had great relations with Sea Shepherd during the chase. And afterwards, we spent, I don't know, weeks and weeks with the crew and with Peter Hammerstedt interviewing them. And I think it's just great that someone is, you know, going out there and doing what they do.